Hi, podcasters. This is Brooke. I'm your art barista at Let's Talk Art, where I serve up great art for your listening pleasure. Today, I'm chatting with Terry Hudson. Terry calls himself the Dream Maker. He empowers creatives, specifically musicians, to find their calling, and then he invests in their success by promoting them. He's had many wins. He talks about chatting with Carlos Santana right before our pod. I wanted to find out the secrets to his successes. Enjoy! I've never been smart with investments or stocks, but one thing I've learned over the years is that an investment in knowledge pays the best interest. If you want to get smart with your money, you can trade smarter and maximize your returns with Trade with UFOs. Trade with UFOs is the brand that represents the community of users trading with predictive tools. You don't have to be good with stocks. They literally hold your hand while you trade, teaching you everything you need to know. You see, Trade with UFOs is also a portal which provides access to predictive apps, predictive courses, and predictive coaching, all to show you how to make money using unfilled orders. Why am I so passionate about this? Because then we'll all have more money in our pockets to buy more art. It's time to get smart with your money. Leverage your success with Trade with UFOs. Go to tradewithufos.com and use my offer code Brooke for 50% off discount on all of their products.
Okay. Hey, how you doing, Terry?
I'm doing good. Got to get everything clipped on and all that. Haven't had to do anything in a while, so give me 1 second.
Sure.
On the button here. There we go. And we're here.
Perfect, perfect. How you doing?
I'm good. Been a pretty busy day as always.
Awesome, awesome. Thank you for making time for me. This is fabulous.
Angle. Did that work for you?
Yep, absolutely. Absolutely.
So how was your day?
It was great. It was great. So what all did you do?
I had an interview this morning with the lead singer of the group Santana.
Oh my gosh.
And then I
the Santana?
Yeah.
Carlos Santana?
Yes.
So oh my gosh.
They're doing a Vegas residency, and so he was taking a little break before he had to fly out to do that with Carlos. So he agreed to come do the show. And then, I have various ones like that we'll talk about, I guess during the interview, but it ranges from industry people to actors. Tomorrow I have a girl who's starring in a new Apple TV show, and she's one of the stars of this new horror movie coming out. It's a sequel called The Strangers Chapter 3. Uh-huh. Comes out from Lionsgate in February. So I got that. It's just crazy how that's evolved in just like a year and three quarters.
Wow. Okay. So I met you at the Art and Creativity on the Edge of AI at the VAPA Center.
Mm-hmm.
And since then I've like, and you did a fabulous, it was a fabulous job. Fabulous. You emceed that, or you led
I love that.
The whole thing. And since then I've noticed that you're like doing like everything. You're like, I mean, you're like everywhere. You're doing like with the, you're with Santana. You're, I mean, you're with like all kinds. Like, okay. So what, and then I read that you're like, you're a dream maker. You make people's dreams come true. So tell me how all this started. Like, what do you do? How did you start it? All of that.
Yeah. So what I do, the dream makers, that's funny. Name how that came about. Actually, I had worked in the music industry for a while, and I worked as an artist manager. I worked as the president of a record label, and then I worked as a record promoter, a radio promoter, where we called the stations and try to get the songs in the chart. So that's kind of like my, and even concert promoter. That was my foray into music. And then I spent about 3 years in the professional wrestling scene.
Oh my gosh.
So in that, we were trying to come up with a character name.
Mm-hmm.
And that was going to be like kind of this, it's more of a character. Like sometimes I was a wrestler, sometimes I was the commissioner, sometimes I was, the manager or whatever they would have me do.
Mm-hmm.
And so the persona was kind of an evil Hollywood agent, kind of.
Yeah.
And we came up with the name Dreammaker.
Okay.
And then when I got back into music, it just stuck, everybody kept calling me that, and uh-huh. So I kept that name, and it's crazy how it's, people still call me that, and yeah. It's even like for the, we have, there's a museum in town that when you walk up their walkway, there's a stone in the ground that says dream maker and poet, and it's Terry and Karma, which is, you know, my wife.
Yeah.
And it's in stone now, so it's official.
Nice. It's official.
Yeah, so what I do is I'm an encourager to people that are starting, you know,
Okay.
their businesses or their calling or their career. And you know, a lot of people confuse that with a life coach, but you know, I'm not somebody that you need coaching your life. You know, I'm somebody that can help you find your calling, you how to take it serious, how to get involved in it, how to pursue it when the world's telling you not to. And I've been, you know, really good in that arena. So that's what I do. So it manifests itself in a few things that I do. One is that I'm an author and I write motivational, you know, style books, or they're kind of how to and kind of motivational at the same time. The other is that I'm a speaker. I do public speaking for various organizations. I show up and I do talks that range from how the brain works with anxiety and depression, all the way over to primarily how the creative side of you works. You know, like one that I do is how creative industries impact local economies. Pretty popular. So in that, I'll do online coaching. And of course, I have the show. And the show is only about a year and three quarters old with me in it. But we're now up to 962,000 subscribers, I think, as of today. So we're almost at a million.
Well, how do you do that? Because that's I think that's incredible.
Well, it's my situation is a little bit unique because I have a lot of friends that are podcasters, and podcasting is a challenge. Like if I would have started off how everybody I know starts off, my video would be grainy as it could be. I would have like two people watching because I didn't, you know how it works. And that's the way you start anything. But I met these people that were trying to create a network, like a radio network, but they were moving into podcasting. So they had about six digital streams, and this is our beats, you know, of course, that I'm talking about. About six digital streams, I think it was, and each one was broken down as far as radio streams. Like one was, I don't remember all the names of them like I should, but Heroes, which is classic rock, and there's some country mix in that. That's one of them. They have DJ World Beats. You know, they have, which is, you know, a DJ styled situation. They also have club and techno. And if people go to rbeats.com, they'll be able to see the different streams there. They have one pretty much for every style of music, it seems like. And they also have it to where you can go read about the music industry and these artists. There's a listen section, which are the streams, a read section, which are the articles, and then a watch section, which is kind of like where they have processed the podcast. And then a live section where you watch the podcast live as they're happening. And then they get retooled for, you know, Instagram Reels, YouTube Shorts, and then, of course, the YouTube channel, which is when I was describing the or talking to you about the 962,000 subscribers. That's YouTube channel, which is RBeats radio channel.
Okay, take me way back. So do you play any, or do you play music or do you sing or
Do not play. I can't believe that I don't play because I've had plenty of opportunity to learn an instrument, and I don't know if it's my ADD or now, you know, it's ADHD, but maybe that's why I never learned an instrument. But I do sing, and I still occasionally perform. Like I've performed at festivals last year, and also there was this guy in town that had this great concept. He runs Charlotte's Creative with his partner. And they have their business partners. One is Tim Olin, the other, I'm sorry, is
Matt.
my mind's going blank on Tim's last name, but Matt Olin is the other partner. And Tim Miner, that's the name, Tim Miner and Matt Olin. So Matt has this concept where it's called one band. They do one rehearsal and one concert, and then you break up. But it's this fabulous setup where they have about 20 people on stage, four vocalists. And the rest are instrumentalists. And it's like two bass players, two keyboard players, a horn section. They got it all. You know, keyboard player, you can pretty much do any song. And you learn them. They give them to you a couple of weeks before you go into the first rehearsal or the only rehearsal. And then you map them out. And then you perform it one time in front of a live audience. And it's always packed. The audience is always great. And I started with them, and I sing more of the rock stuff with them. They had me do Foo Fighters or the Doobie Brothers or George Michael, anything that's more of a higher, punchier vocal.
Right. Awesome.
But where I started was I used to be a singer way back many, many, many years ago, more of in the rock vein, and I did some gospel, and I got to sing in some pretty cool places in front of some great crowds. So that was
Cool. Awesome. Awesome. Well, I mean, you're so connected to like everything, and like anything you touch, it seems like turns into gold, like turns to a success. So I'm just curious, like, what is your secret?
I think there's a couple things there. I heard this expression many years ago. I think it was attributed to J. Paul Getty, which said, "I would rather have 1% of 100 people's efforts rather than 100% of my own." And when I looked around, I saw, that there were a lot of talented people. And they wanted to do their thing, and a great idea is not just a great idea because it's yours. It's a great idea no matter, whose idea it is.
Right.
A lot of times, people are protective of that and very competitive and very fearful of sharing. And so I tried to look at it a different way. Now, I will tell you something that helped me and changed me. It was a big blessing in my life. At the height of what I was doing in the music industry, I developed anxiety and I didn't know what it was. And so I didn't reach out for help and it got to a crippling situation.
Right.
I was very arrogant, before then. Very arrogant music industry guy, kind of like the guys you see, like on Entourage and these shows. And I didn't look at people the same way I do now. So I went through this, and of course, I read up on cognitive therapy, and I reconnected heavily with my faith, and God led me through this path, and I came out of it. And now I do opening prayers for NFL games, and
Oh,
I
wow.
stand in front of crowds and all this kind of stuff. Back then, I couldn't even walk out of my house. Like, I couldn't go to the mailbox. Felt like the ground was shaking. That's
Oh, wow.
so crazy, to look
Yeah.
back at that now, and that was a reality, but it was a real reality.
Wow.
And to the point of, because I couldn't go anywhere, I would dream that I would be able to go to a concert one day, or dream that I'd be able to get, to some event. And I would even, I had, it was just hopeless. I
Yeah.
even wanted to move into a retirement home. I was only like 40 at the time. Wanted to move into a retirement home where I didn't ever have to go anywhere.
Right.
People would just bring me food.
Yeah.
Even today, I look back at that. I can't believe I was in that place. But it was such a blessing
Yeah.
because as I was coming through that and learning about the brain, and like I said, reconnecting with my faith, growing really strong in prayer and the hopelessness that was starting to fade. I learned two things. The first one about fear I learned is I used to think that I'll get over something and then I'll do something. And it turned out that's not how you do it. Like driving, I couldn't drive a car because I thought one day I'll get over this and then drive a car. It turned out I had to get in the car and drive it, then get over it. And so that lesson taught me a lot about, the way I do business and things now. But the other thing was I looked in people's eyes different and I saw they weren't the jerks that I thought they were. They were fearful. And I worked different with them. And when I worked different with them, I was able to, I guess you would say, see a greatness that they could be based on what dream was put inside of them that they weren't seeing and they didn't know how to get to. And it just became the way I worked with people.
So like you meet someone and they're kind of like they have a bad attitude and they're just a major jerk and just completely awful to you. So like so tell me what you would do.
Well, in that situation, nobody is born a jerk, right? Life has shaped them. And we're so busy with our lives and we're so protective with our own emotions that we can't see that a lot of times in the other person. And you can either let your emotions be at a height where that offends you immediately and you respond, and nobody benefits from that, right? I think those things still immediately. Like when someone approaches me like that, I still think, what a jerk. You get that inside where you're like that, but you don't let that come out. You sit and you think about it and you're like, I wonder what made this person like this. because those kind of things are born out of fear.
Right.
So what is it? You know, you sit and you talk to them, you talk to them, you're looking them in the eyes, you're questioning them, and you know, finding out why, you know, they're thinking this way, and trying to understand them. And I think when you learn to understand people, you can start to see things. A lot of times we're trying to be understood before we understand somebody.
Right.
And that's a hard thing. I think it was Stephen Covey that said, seek first to understand, then to be understood.
Yeah.
And that has worked much better for me. And because of that, I have people that would have been my enemies, you know, 10 years ago, or, you know, 6 years ago, even, or whatever, that I work with on projects and things now, because we got past that point.
Okay.
And there was one guy, for instance, he was known for flipping out and being angry on everybody he works with. And I ended up being honest with him. We're working on two or three projects right now.
Wow.
But I'm the one that can work with him. But it's not that, you know, there's something special about me. It's just I went through something that taught me there's a better way to deal with people.
Right, right. That's interesting. I wrote a book called Reptiles on Caffeine. It's about the brain, the fight or flight stress response, and kind of set in a cafe. And it deals a lot with that. It sounds like a lot of what you're talking about. And so, yeah, it was a learning process for me. But I still, even though I understand a lot of it, I certainly don't claim to have laid hold of it. But I, even though I understand some of it, I still have a hard time dealing with negative and rude people.
And they're out there, you know, and you cannot change the world. But you can facilitate a better world.
Yes.
Not everybody is going to change. There are artists that they are the best singers that you will hear, are the best instrumentalists, are the best actors, but they don't feel they ever need to do certain things. They don't feel they need to be kind, or they don't even feel like they need to go to a seminar to learn, or they don't, you know, need to do everything that you have to do to make it. They never do. You know,
right.
They never make it. They don't feel the need to rehearse, whatever it is. And a lot of that is the protective emotion thing. It's not real. It's just real to them.
Okay.
But I like the fact that you wrote that book. I mean, I've never, you know, heard of somebody that's written something of that concept. So that's pretty cool.
Well, yeah, I kind of, it was something, it was just something that I realized when I was working the food service industry, and, or the customer service industry too. And just kind of, why are these people so angry? And then it was just kind of like, so it was all about them at first. But then I was like, why? Then I saw myself doing it. And I was like, why am I so angry? Why am I doing this? Why is everyone doing this? Why is this okay?
Yeah, we all do it.
So it's more just trying to understand that it's a stress response. And like I said, it doesn't make it any better. It doesn't make me handle things usually any better, but it's just kind of, I understand it. And so I can understand it in retrospect, I guess.
I think that's an advantage we have. You know, I look at my dad, who was a gang leader, who became a preacher and changed so many people around him.
Well, you said a gang leader who became
He was a gang leader that became a preacher.
Wow.
And it just, like, when I was at his funeral, I had actual gang members that had, you know, they were older people now. Like, I think one of them was maybe 70, but he told me, for instance, when he was young, that how he met my dad was my dad, who was a preacher at the time, helped save him from a gang fight and hid him somewhere. I believe the story was, you know, while the gang passed, and he got to know my dad and ended up changing his life. But when you hear all the stories of who my dad was and who he became, it was a big inspiration, you know, for me. Is that people can actually change. I mean, this was my dad. And in that, there was an expression that I've heard a couple times. I even used it in my book, which is, you know, I look like my dad. I look exactly like him.
Okay.
And that expression is, you are born looking like your parents, but you die looking like your decisions.
Okay.
And in that, my dad, you know, just like me, he was born looking like, I'm sure, his dad. And he went a lot of the ways that, you know, his family had gone, but then he made the decision to change. And through that, so many people changed with it. And then in this phase of my life, and looking with all these tools that we have now, it's like I have the same mission as my dad, but look at the tools we have. We have podcasting, we have social media, one of the big things that helped me change was Audible. Because when you have new information, you can make new decisions, right? I go through 50 audiobooks a year. That I couldn't do that if I didn't have something like Audible. Because I can put headphones in, I can, have them when I'm working out, I can have them when I'm walking around, whatever it is, walking around the mall or the neighborhood, and you can get through so many books that you wouldn't have time to just sit and read. And then, of course, you have YouTube videos now that are just how-tos on, you can learn how to run cameras or have lighting for the camera or how to create wealth. There's just so many opportunities that you have to learn that you didn't have back then. It was either you went to college or you didn't know, or you had to know somebody that was in that field.
Totally. That's amazing. Yeah, it's amazing. So it's I was wondering, like, what are some of your secrets for marketing? Like, marketing your all of your stuff, your Dreammaker stuff, your podcast, your books, your speeches, your everything.
I think with me, wrestling, and of course, my dad being a preacher and me growing up around music, I learned that you're kind of a expounded character of who you are as a human. And there are a lot of people on social media, and they're all vying for numbers. Numbers are big in their head. When you really, who you want is it's not all numbers. What you want is people that want to be in your tribe or part of your tribe and connected to. So my character, it is everything that I am. Like my hair is pointed to the ceiling. It's kind of a trademark. Even my grandkids, instead of like pop, they call me crazy hair. So that's become a thing. The Dreammaker, moniker with it. The fact that I'm with my wife a lot, who is a very interesting character herself. She's known as Kerma the Poet, and she's from Colombia, and she's has a very I don't know if the right word would be flamboyant fashion, but a
She's
lot of
beautiful.
people pay attention to her dresses and the way she does her makeup and her hair and all of that. So they, we're labeled the Dreammaker and the Poet, like I've said
Cool.
before. And
Cool.
so in that, having that kind of character, I think sets you apart. The other thing is story. People are very interested in story, and I don't think enough people spend time developing theirs as, business owners or people trying to break in social media. When, whether you're watching American Idol or a UFC fight or professional wrestling or the football season or the Real Housewives of whatever town it is at the time or some TLC show, it's always the build up before it happens, right? The actual fight or the game is okay, interesting sometimes. Many times it doesn't live up to the hype. What people buy into that for is the story. That's why people binge, watch Netflix and Amazon and all that with these series, because it's a story, it's the character development. So spend time knowing who you are and who you genuinely are, how that can be expounded on, so it's interesting to other people, because that's how you really learn about yourself. Otherwise, you project something that's disingenuous. Like I see a lot of music acts, for instance, they'll make their music videos and they will be flashing money. It looks like $100,000. They probably paid $13 for it on Amazon, so they could use it in a music video, or people will try to be, use fashion that's not them, or they'll just have a story that's, not believable, and it looks more like a highlight reel than something that people want to be attached. So you have that part first, but the biggest part is that you make yourself accessible to people. So that they know that even though you're this character, you're one of them. And you can see this in people's posts. If you post a picture of you at a great restaurant, sometimes people will really like that, right? Especially you're in the picture, you're posting you at this great restaurant, it's a great meal. If you post a picture of you in front of the Eiffel Tower, it doesn't always work because people are jealous that you're at the Eiffel Tower because you're not one of them. And it's one thing that Kerm and I have developed where we are the characters. But and it's really who we are. It's just expounded. It's not, we didn't make up somebody. We are these people. We're just expounded. But the people that watch us know that they're very important to us. We don't try to just be their friends on social media. If they're at a live event, we're there mingling with them. We're there at the the parties. We're not just doing the red carpet thing. We're actually sitting with them. We're talking about them, getting to know them. And I think those two factors set you apart from what, is a normal, I guess somebody normally doing social media, because basically everybody has an account. And if you're trying to do this as a business, or you're a podcaster or whatever it is, you want to be different than what's out there. You have to know yourself so that when people view you, they see you as different than the next person that's out there, and they know that you genuinely care about them.
So that is really great advice. That's really great. So, but what does that look like in practice, I guess?
Well, with us, for instance, when we show up at these events, we don't just take pictures of ourselves, we take pictures with the people. Like if you look at, there's a mastermind that I go to with a lady named Carrie Schmidt, and you'll see us all take pictures as a group. And I make a list as those people are talking about themselves. I get their phone numbers and I find out what they're doing. And the next day I'm texting them and sending them info, and I'm showing them the show. And when Kerma and I go to an event, we always try to show up looking like who we're supposed to look like. So that's part of the practice. And another part of that cements it, is behind the scenes stuff works very well with people. Let me ask you this. What got you into podcasting?
I graduated from college finally, and I with a graphic design degree, and I didn't want to do that anymore because I got my first job and I didn't go as well as I didn't I just figured I couldn't do it anymore. And so I was like, what am I going to do? And my boyfriend Adam said, you should start a podcast, because I wanted to do something in public speaking, but I didn't know what. And I wanted to talk about art, and I was like, I don't know. But so and I'd never heard of podcasting. Podcasting was new, and I was like, what's a podcast? I don't know what that is. That's probably stupid. And
That's how I thought at first too. I agree.
so that's how I started. And
Well, what would you speak on?
well, I wanted to talk about art. I wanted to talk about like art history. I wanted to talk about, I didn't want to be a teacher necessarily, but I wanted to talk about like how inspiring I was finding art history to be, and how inspiring I was finding art to be. And I didn't know if I wanted, I knew it to be a curator, I needed to have like an MFA, and I didn't really necessarily want to have that. I didn't have that at the time. I don't have that now. But and I wouldn't be opposed to getting it, but I wanted to do something that I could do like now. And so he was like, you should start a podcast. So I found out what it was, and I love it.
Yeah, and one of the things is having an email list, which is, before things got busy, that's one thing we were really good at, and we're having to get kicking off with the new year with that again. But I'm a big believer in email list, email platforms like a Constant Contact or a MailChimp, where the people that come to your events and you're getting their email addresses and you're staying in contact with them. That keeps you connected with them, especially doing something like a podcast. And finding who that tribe is, because you look at the numbers we have as a network, and they're great numbers, and I'm not definitely going to say anything negative about that because we're blessed. But I'm really more interested in the people that give us feedback, because I know they're the real tribe. The people that come out to concerts or the events, or tell us what guests that they want to see, or something like that. Or the when whatever event I'm at, I'm seeing a lot of the same people that show up, and we've kind of built a tribe around that. I think that's more important for growth, because if you're doing a podcast and you're trying to monetize a certain thing, yeah, you can monetize on YouTube, and you can be monetized differently once you reach a certain mark. But when you look at artists that are trying to build something, the same as podcasters, you are trying to eventually have a product that you want people to buy, or an event that they want you to come speak at, because there's more money involved in that than there's some of these others. Sometimes it's just online coaching. You can get way more of that done with real people that are engaged than you can just numbers. So I focus more on the engagement than I do the numbers. You'll see me respond to all my posts, the people that comment on them. You know, like I said, I take notes of people when we're in live events, and I try to contact them back to the best of my ability as fast as I can, so I'm building that, and you know, eventually that turns into something.
You contacted me like right away after the event, so that was cool. I thought that was really cool.
Yeah. Well, I could see right away you were doing something different, you know, with what you were doing. And you know, I went through and listened to a couple of the episodes towards the early part, when I had maybe a couple of weeks after I'd met you. I can't remember, you know, how long it was after that, and got to know a little bit about what you're doing. And those are, you know, with podcasting being like it is, you have potential to not only reach people, but you have the potential to shine light on some things that are pretty important.
Absolutely. That's what I love doing. I love, just finding people doing cool things and just
Yeah.
talking to them
And
about it.
I'll tell you one thing that podcasting did for me too. When I was first getting back, you know, because my now wife is the one that was talking me into getting back into music and entertainment, because she found out I used to do it. One of the first things is I would talk to industry people, and I started doing these live seminars at one of the rehearsal spaces here to help that rehearsal space grow. It was a space called Jambox. We were doing something called Jambox Sessions, and I would go teach the seminars, but I wanted some of my friends in the industry to be involved in that too. And there were, you know, you would have to bring them into town, which would be very costly, or you could do maybe you could pipe them in on TV, and unless you have the right technology for that, you know, it doesn't work as effective. But with podcasting, I've been able to have all these people on. I interview people in Poland and, you know, London and Phoenix and LA and whatever, and they're just pipe in, and you're sometimes putting in your earbuds or your headphones for remotes and things like that, but you have access to everybody. And now that podcasting is growing, you don't just have to interview somebody in your town. You can interview some artist that's, you know, like I said, out in Phoenix or New Mexico or LA or wherever it is. It's an opportunity that we never had before.
Absolutely. I just think it's so amazing that I can like talk to someone like in Germany, like
Yeah.
from my guest room and not
Right.
even leave the house.
Yeah, and that's one thing. People say, you know, they'll ask me, what kind of money is podcasting? And I'm like, you're focusing on the wrong thing. There's money in it, especially if you're doing it at a certain level. But you don't get in it to be the next Joe Rogan or Theo Vaughn or, you know, whatever like that. The
That'd be
reason you get in
nice.
it is curiosity.
Yeah, absolutely.
And if you were to go up to somebody that you really admired and you would say, "Hey, I would like you to come to my house for 30 minutes because I would just like to talk to you about what you're doing." A lot of times they would just say no. But if you say, "I have a show, I'd love to have you come on and let's talk about this project you're doing," you got 30 to 40 minutes at least of a conversation of their time, and then you have it on camera, and so and they agree to it.
Absolutely.
You know, I'm dealing with national artists all the time now. I start off interviewing artists from Charlotte, you know, performers from Charlotte, and now it's like legends are the guy that trained Taylor Swift or the producers for American Idol, or, you know, yeah, it's like people that, you know, I could never get to come to Charlotte and I could have a phone conversation with them, but nobody would ever see that. So having a podcast, it's like video capture of, hey, this is what this person has to say, and I get to ask them the questions.
Totally. It's a wonderful thing.
Yeah.
So it's a Yeah, it's really a great thing. I was thinking today actually when I first started, I'm an introvert, so I'm not as but I'm very I'm a good conversationalist, but I'm not but I think just the thought of like talking to like people I don't know just like really like on camera or on tape or on whatever just makes me nervous. And like but the first when I first started the podcast, I think the whole month for whole first month I had like this perpetual pit in my stomach just because I felt like I was going to throw up the whole time because I was so nervous, but I loved it. I absolutely loved it. So it was just so amazing, and I still love it. That's what makes me do it.
Yeah, and you are a great conversationalist, and you know how to ask questions, you know how to listen, and that's all this is. It's like we're in a
Thank you.
coffee shop, but
Thank
just
you.
people have cameras, you know, or phones. That's all it is we're talking just like we talk in a coffee shop. And it's one thing when somebody is just starting something, Something I'll say, not you're starting, but we're talking to people, you
Right.
know, that are listening to this that will just be starting a project. And I see this in everything, in actors and recording artists and business people, that there's so much that stops them. It's all fear, but it stops them from
Yeah.
doing a certain thing
Oh,
because
yeah.
they don't know how to do every bit of it. And that's the point. You don't just learn it all and do. You
Right.
start and fail and learn as you go. That's how we do it, right?
Absolutely.
And so I say, your first thing will not be a masterpiece.
Right.
But without that first thing, you'll never realize your masterpiece.
That is so true. That is so
Right. Just
true.
do it and start it and don't worry about what anybody thinks about.
Practice in public.
There will be people that do not like you. I have people that love me, but I have people that do not like me. And
Right.
it's okay. You know, you're what is it? There's a great book called You're a Badass, I think is what it is.
You're a badass. Yeah, there
Yeah.
got several of them.
And so there's a great line in that, which is you're not everybody's cup of tea.
Yeah.
And it's not. And
Right.
it's okay because you got your tribe. They'll tune in and they'll listen.
Jen Cisnero, I think, is the author of that. You're a
Maybe I have it here, but I'm not wearing my glasses, so I can't see from here to my bookshelf
badass.
who that author is.
That's okay. But yeah, that is a good book. So yeah, I know I'm not everyone's cup of tea, and that's fine. That's not everyone likes art, and that's perfectly fine.
Can you believe that though? That not everyone loves art?
I really cannot
They're
believe
not mind blowing.
that. I really can't believe that. That's part of the mission of my podcast, and is to kind of bring art to people and make them realize that it's cool and just and not because there's people who would not set foot in a gallery or a museum, and I was one of those people for a long time, even though I was kind of artsy, but then I just kind of realized the magic of art and just the perspective changing capacity of it, and just that it just it then I just was like, I have to tell everyone, I've got to tell everyone.
The art evangelist, you know,
Exactly.
that's what
Exactly.
you could call. It was crazy for me because I was that guy that would actually won an art award one time, and to me it was the craziest thing I ever did. But I won like second in an international contest, I think it is,
Oh,
because
wow.
it gave me a scholarship to go to college,
Wow.
which that was a waste of time for me. I could have done way better than that. But anyway, I won this award, so I've always loved, you know, art. But I've not been one of those guys that you know, this art was your life and you were going to do this. But I would, because it's so much involved, I have great appreciation for artists because there's so much involved
There's
in
so, yeah.
making that happen that I'm just not that guy.
Right.
But I love, you know, to dabble. And so I would go into museums, especially the Mint Museum in Charlotte, North Carolina,
Yeah.
and I would just stare at the paintings and stare at the frames. And I would have friends that would tell me more about it. And I was learning about the brush strokes and, you know, even the cost of the frames and why the frame was important and the placement and, you know, all of that within the museum. And then during the pandemic, I meet somebody on a dating site and it turns out they work at the Mint Museum.
Oh,
And
wow.
I didn't even know until we met in person. She never would tell me her job.
Ah.
And so once we met in person and started dating, I found out she's the event coordinator for the Mint Museum.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And so, you know, I go to all these art events. I don't take any of that for granted now, but it's as big of a lover of art as I was before. I'm just blown away, fascinated
Oh, yeah,
by the
totally.
things that I've seen come through. Those guys do such a great job.
Totally, totally. That is awesome. So you started, you have Hudson Media Concepts.
Which is changing this year.
Changing this year?
Yep. It's going to reflect more of my name that I use.
Okay.
And you know, my Hudson Media Concepts, my name is Hudson, obviously, and I was a vice president of a company that my brother runs, and I was vice president for years, and it's called Showcase Media and Management. So when I separated from him, I just took my last name and kept the word media, and it was Hudson Media, you know, Hudson Media Concepts.
Cool.
But to me, it sounds like a graphic art, you know, company or something of
Yeah.
that nature.
Yeah.
And it's not really what I do, so I'm changing a lot of the branding this year,
Okay.
especially since I'm out, you know, speaking a lot and of course doing the show now. So I'm going to go more with something that fits that.
Right,
I'll be
right.
doing that by spring.
Okay. Well, in the 2 minute or so we have left, where can people find you?
They can find me on social media because to me that's the best place for me. Let me say it this way. They can see the show on two places.
Okay.
rbeats.com, that's rbeatz.com, and of course rbeats radio. When I first I'll say that to people at first, they say, "Did you say you work at Arby's?" And I was like, "Oh, is there anything wrong with that?" No, I work rbeats. So I'm a host with rbeats, and I say Arby's has the meats, we got the beats.
Nice, I love it.
So it's rbeats.com, like I said, with a Z. And then rbeats radio is the YouTube channel.
Okay.
And they have, of course, you know, the shorts and all that, as well as the full shows. And very interesting concept. You'll love what you're seeing there. And
Cool.
then, of course, Instagram, I'm Dreammaker TH.
Okay.
So it's just Dreammaker and then TH, which is Terry Hudson.
There
So
you go. Perfect.
my wife says it looks like King James English, like Dreammaker is.
Dreammaker.
So that makes it easier to remember.
That's
And
good.
of course, you know, Facebook is just Terry Hudson. But on Facebook, for people that are on Facebook, I've started a motivational group.
Thank you so much to Terry Hudson for chatting with me and sharing what's made you so successful. If you want to see more of Terry, go to rbeats.com. If you're finding value in these episodes, please like, share, or consider sponsoring my Patreon. As always, thanks for listening. This is a Hotspur Media production, music by Rue Walker.